definite religions, religions which have been created by Buddha or by Muhammad or by Jesus Christ. 17, it then goes on to attack even natural religion. For instance, I go outside and look at the beautiful sunset and I say, hey, God must exist. Now Freemasonry attacks that. Freemasonry proceeds to undermine the great religious truths accessible to natural reason, like the existence of God. And finally, 18, it follows on that, that all natural truths, finally objective truth itself, fall in ruins. And so, go back to the picture of grandfather Protestantism, the rejection of Christ's vicar, the rejection of Christ, the rejection of God, the rejection of truth. That's exactly what this section of the encyclical on Freemasonry is talking about. It's moving left to right on that third line of the grandfather Protestantism schema. Notice the escalation of the attack. It's a scene from the definition of the assumption. The definition of the assumption is the 20th stitch. And the natural existence of God is the first stitch. Don't think you can let that 20th stitch go and the Freemasons and the enemies of Christ are going to stop. They will go on yanking at the seam until one stitch comes off or another comes, until they've got the very existence, the very natural grasp of the existence of God comes apart. And then the natural existence of 2 and 2 is 4 comes apart. That's the final step. And then, of course, people are crazy. And that's the step that's being reached today. The very most elementary truths are being attacked in people's minds, which is why people today are so confused. And the confusion is getting worse every day. And it's the product of Freemasonry, essentially. There are agents primarily responsible, it's the Freemasons. Not all Freemasons, some of them are monks without being villains. But the villains are the primary responsible. Yes,
Ezekiel. Didn't rationalism through the Renaissance precede Protestantism?
In that sense, yes. Yes. But the Renaissance was already a...
Wasn't it getting a prime for Protestantism?
Yes, it was. That's correct. So I think that Protestantism had its forebears as well. But the thing really broke out with Protestantism. It was the Renaissance, the leaders of the Renaissance were still nominally Catholics. But you're quite right that underneath they were already humanist and already the revolt against God and the putting man in the place of God was well on the way with the Renaissance. But it really broke out with the Germans with Luther in the Reformation.
My second question was, is naturalism related to deism at all? Is that the same thing?
Oh, yes. Are they different? Yes. Deism is the belief in a natural God, but the refusal of any supernatural God.
He retracted after he made it, and he has an interview.
It's the clockmaker God. Yes, right. it's the denial of the Trinity and the existence of a clockmaker God who wound up the universe, started it going, and then walked away, so to speak. Yes, that's more or less the issue. And Freemasonry, some Freemasons believe in God, but they certainly don't believe in 3 and 1, 1 and 3. They believe in the great architect. who you could say is the great clockmaker.
Right, the correlation I saw here is naturalism, and that is that the supernatural, because the deism, there's no more intervention than the supernatural.
Absolutely, that's so right. That's right. God made the universe and then walked away, yes.
What you were saying now about all that, about Freemasonry, what about the Elders of Zion? Their ideas is the same?
We move on to evil practice. We've not got very much longer. We've got a few more minutes. The evil practice, 19 to 23. And we'll look through this together in class. Thus destroying all morality's foundations in dogma and truth. Understand this. The Masons hate dogma. The Masons hate dogma with a passion. The Masons absolutely refuse that there is a supernatural truth or a supernatural authority to define a truth. Notice you've got two systems. One is the system of religious liberty and the other is the system of dogmatic truth. And the two systems clash head on like two express trains on the same railway track. It's one or the other. And the Freemasons are all for religious liberty, In other words, treating all the religions equal, respecting them all, giving them all an equal chance. And by the same token, the Freemasons hate dogma. Catholics love dogma because dogma is truth, and Catholics love truth. It's truth which is being given them with certainty by the Church. You don't have to wonder about the dogma. It's absolutely solidly rock-solid truth. A mind that, just as a stomach likes meat, a real mind likes truth. It doesn't mind being given truth, it longs to be given truth. Therefore, a real mind loves dogma. But a modern mind hates dogma, because a modern mind thinks that dogma is reducing or diminishing its liberty. So it's either it's liberty on the one side and truth on the other. It's a false liberty which is opposed to truth. What did our Lord say about truth? The truth will make you... will set you free. And as our Lord says, the truth is the foundation of any real liberty. The truth will give you liberty. But the Masonic liberty is not a liberty, the real liberty coming from truth. Masonic liberty is a false liberty opposed to truth. So that if the Church gives me dogmatic truth, I don't want it. I want liberty for my mind to think as I like. And you've now got Catholic universities all over the world saying, the name of academic freedom, we want to be free what we like. But you're a Catholic university, you got the truth, you don't question that. We want to be free to question what we like. You're no longer Catholic, period. But that's the way the Masons have infiltrated these Catholic universities and have stopped them being Catholic. They are no longer Catholic. They don't think like Catholics. When they talk and yammer about academic freedom, what they're talking about is the right to deny Catholic truth. That's not Catholic. It's got nothing to do with Catholicism. But that's the enemy that's got inside and has destroyed these universities from inside. Some enemy has done this. Who said that? Some enemy has done this. In the parable of the
seeds.
That's it, the cockle and the wheat. You remember, the servant comes to his master and says, Master, you serve good wheat, and I've just looked at the field last night and it's full of cockle. And the master says, some enemy has done this. Some enemy has got inside those Catholic universities, which were put together with the dimes and nickels of good Catholics for years and years. Some enemy got inside and turned all of those universities over to Masonic thinking. And now they're no longer Catholic. There's nothing Catholic left about them. So, destroying all morality's foundations in dogma and truth, they unleash a deplorable immorality. By denying original sin and the first thing to notice there is that morals rest upon dogma. Why? That's a key point. Morals rest upon dogma in such a way that if you destroy dogma, you destroy morals. Now, again, modern people don't think that. Modern people think dogma doesn't matter, but morals do. And you can have morals without dogma. Give me an example of someone who thinks that. Somebody who encourages all religions and then is strong on Catholic morals. The Pope?
But morals are consequences of dogma.
Of course they are. Why are morals the consequences of dogma? Why are morals the consequences of dogma?
Because it tells you what to think and how to think. Like, they set boundaries, like, you know.
It's praying.
That's how I look at it. Like, you know where the limits are, type of thing.
Well, that's if you're told morals. But why is dogma the foundation of morals?
Because you know what's right or wrong.
Because I'm told, you know, for instance, you mustn't commit adultery. But that's not dogma. That's morals. Why does you mustn't commit adultery rest upon dogma?
Because it's true.
Well, because what the Church teaches is the existence of God and the existence of heaven and hell.
The wages
of sin is death. If you commit adultery, you're going to go to hell. So the Church teaches dogmatically, hell exists, and if you die in mortal sin, that's where you're going to go. That's not morals, that's dogma. Morals then comes on and says, adultery is mortal sin. Dogma says, if you commit mortal sin, you'll go to hell. Hell exists, and if you commit mortal sin, you'll go to hell. Morals then says, this and this is mortal sin. Therefore, morals absolutely supposes the backing of dogma to give it any oomph at all, right? What's you shan't commit adultery? Oh, you shan't commit adultery because it's not nice. Right? Well, why shouldn't I do something that's not nice? Because people don't like it. Because you're harming the whites of other people. That's nothing. That's blow that away. Because you will go to hell, and I don't even need to raise my voice, because if you die in mortal sin, you will go to hell, where you will be roasted in unimaginable pain for all eternity. Who says that? The Catholic Church says that. And I can't change it, and you can't change it. What? I'm sorry, it's true, even if you and I don't believe it. That's dogma. And if dogma is true, independently of what I think or what I want, then you know, I better not commit adultery. That's why morals rest upon adultery. And morals without, morals rest upon dogma. Morals without dogma have got no kick in them at all. And no binding force at all. If God didn't exist, and if he didn't have a hell and a heaven with which to punish or reward people, where would morals be? I couldn't care less. We'll continue this evening.
That's the way my world is.
Then, you know, may have noticed that this evening Father Fay was going through the encyclical. He's writing this chapter on Freemasonry and was just about following the encyclical, word by word. He just arrived at the point we have reached, coincidentally, how morality rests upon dogma. It's a very important point. You see, George Washington, for instance, he was a decent man. And he believed there could be no nation without morality, and how right he is. But he also believed that religion should be free, which, for a Protestant gentleman, may be a very reasonable thing to believe. The question is not whether it's a reasonable thing for a Protestant gentleman to believe. The question is whether you can found a nation upon religious liberty. And if you found a nation, if religious liberty dissolves dogma, then ultimately you're going to dissolve morality. There's no way around it. And if you build a nation upon religious liberty, it's simply a matter of time before the morality goes down the drain. And it's not just the United States. It's not just the United States. I mean, England has been building on religious liberty for many years now, and France, and now Spain has joined in. I mean, it's all of these nations. Please don't think it's just a question of the United States. The problem is not something special to the United States. If I mention the United States, it's simply because it's an example that's around us, all of us. But the problem is liberalism, which is everywhere. It's absolutely international. Satan is international. But if I just pull up some of the examples from the United States, that's no more than just a local example, that's all. But then morals rest on dogma. It's a key point. For instance, this Pope, let's assume that he's a decent man, and I've got no wish or particular reason to say anything else. I'm not questioning he's a nice guy, okay? And I'm not attacking him as a guy. I'm attacking his ideas, because his ideas are, let's have morality, no abortion, bingo, no contraception, wonderful, no women priests, right, no divorce. He's right, in morality, questions of morality. And then he comes forward and says, but let's be nice to all religions. And he practices that, for instance, at Assisi. Right? So he says, let's be nice to all religions. Now, for instance, in the Mohammedan religion, you can have four wives. So he's going to say to the Catholics, no divorce, but then he says, let's go and be nice to the religion which has four wives. You know, the one undercuts the other. His lack of dogma undercuts his morals, which is why the decent, let's assume, I don't want to attack him and I don't want to be nasty, but I mean, the question is, you know, ideas have consequences, and if his ideas are right or wrong, it makes no difference how nice a guy he is. If his ideas are right, it doesn't matter how nasty he is. If his ideas are right, it doesn't matter how nasty he is. And some excellent bishops have been sons of bitches. Because they've held the faith, which means that, you know, Everybody can, and they've been nasty in order to defend the faith. Good for them. If you keep the faith, it doesn't matter how nasty you are. If you don't keep the faith, it doesn't matter how nice you are. That's what people today can't understand. Because they think it's all a question of being a nice guy or a nasty guy. It isn't. It's a question of keeping the faith or betraying the faith. Then the Pope, what was I going to say? He holds the line in morals, and then he's abandoning the dogma. It's like those, you can compare it to those great old oak trees. You may have seen them, or maple trees. They're old. The heart is rotted out, but they're still standing. And there's still sap going up the bark on the outside, and there's still a couple of branches with leaves on. And each year, each spring, faithfully they go on cranking out leaves until another thunderbolt flattens the whole thing finally. But they're still producing leaves on the outside, but the inside is rotten. And that's what this good Pope is. His dogma is no good because he really believes in religious liberty. We could go into that one if you like. This question of religious liberty is crucial. His center is no good because he believes in religious liberty. He believes in being nice to all of these false religions. But the morals are still holding. But it's simply a matter of time before his morals collapse. It's just a matter of time. Because people will say, why should I not have two wives if I've got to be nice to Mohammedans who have four? Be consistent. Either I must have only one wife and then the Mohammedans are off the wall. All of the Mohammedans are good guys, and then I may have four wives. There's no real reason why I shouldn't have four wives. They like they have. One or the other. But the good, you see, he's in contradiction without realizing it. A lot of people are in contradiction without realizing it. They're mixing systems. They're mixing part liberalism and part Catholicism. And then there's contradiction. There's only not contradiction if you're either completely liberal, which is difficult to be completely liberal. Even Clinton this weekend said something about let's be a little bit religious. Plus, something brushed off the Pope or whatever, I don't know what it was. He got together 50 religious ministers and what was it? What was he saying to them? We shouldn't be too secular. Can you believe it? Yeah, that's it. So it's very difficult to be completely liberal. It's also not easy to be, today, it's not easy to be completely Catholic. Let's say think like a Catholic right down the line, it's not easy. Because we're all of us more or less touched, I was going to say, affected by liberalism. It's very deep, very universal liberalism today. Liberalism is the grand word that covers it all, right? All right. Destroying all morality's foundations in dogma and truth, they unleash a deplorable immorality. If there's no God, why should I behave myself? Dostoevsky saw that in the 19th century in his incredible novel. So, have you read any Dostoevsky? He sees that, you know, if you don't believe in God, there's no reason for any morality. And if you believed in a God who doesn't have a heaven and a hell, there's no reason for morality. If God is just a nice sugar daddy who will approve of whatever you do, there's no reason to refrain from adultery. You refrain from adultery when you're scared that if you commit it, you're going to go to hell. So morals require doctrine. George Washington didn't see it. He was a decent man. He was the product of 1800 years of Christianity, or nearly, 1700 years of Christianity, and he assumed that everybody would sort of accept it. It's that Englishman's gentleman's agreement, which he was living off. But gentlemen's agreements get eroded. Gentlemen's agreements are not tough enough to stand up to, she's a pretty gal and she's somebody else's wife and I want her. You know, a gentleman's agreement when she's pretty enough just won't hack you. And that's how it is with morals. I mean, you can't rely on Englishmen's gentlemen's agreements when girls are pretty. You've got to have the fires of hell to stop going after the girls because girls are that pretty. You know, I mean, let's face it. So you've got to have a tough backing for morality. As a Scotsman once said, a church without hell isn't worth a damn. Now he said, a kirk without a hell isn't worth a damn. It's absolutely true. Absolutely true. And that's why the Mother of God showed the fires of hell to those three little children. 7, 8, and 9, just into whatever they were, but they were much older than that. And those little children, you look at those photographs, wow, they have been up there strong. They're almost terrified little faces. They are serious, those little children, because they've seen what hell is. They've seen who God is. They've seen what sin is. They've seen. They're not the rules. They're going to, two of them died saints, and the third one's on the way. They're not the rules. So, you know. Dogma, morality without dogma is a dream of the modern decent liberals. But you see, a decent liberal is a contradiction in terms. Why? What department does decency belong to? What does decency? Decency means his, whereas liberal means his, what do you see what I'm saying?
Decency, yes, sir.
His.
Well, that's the way to, according to the commandments of the church, yeah?
That decency is his morals, whereas his liberalism is his dogma.
Yeah.
Therefore, decency in morals and liberalism in dogma, the true trains again. Sooner or later, either the decency will rebuild his dogma to the truth and forget about this rotten liberty, this false liberty, or his false liberty is going to undermine his decency. But a decent liberal is a contradiction in terms. And if he succeeds in living until his death as a decent liberal on the compromise that he worked out between the ages of 1 and 25, his kids won't be able to do it. His kids will either go liberal or they'll go decent, but they won't be able to keep his balance, his unstable balance. People do work out for themselves in life an unstable mixture, an unstable balance. But their kids can't have the same balance. It's not possible. And they'll take it one way or the other. And of course, generally, they take it in the wrong direction. Kids are constantly testing adults. And they're testing them for dogma. They know that Dad's a decent fella, but Dad, what's the backing for your decency? Why are you decent? Oh, I'm decent because I'm decent. Dad, that's not enough. I want something more. Well, I haven't got any more. I mean, we're all nice because we're nice, and we're meant to be nice. Why should we be nice? I'm not going to be nice. Well, you should be nice. Slap on the wrist. Won't work. It won't work. Dad's got to say to the boy, I believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth, and in Jesus Christ, and in the fires of hell. And if you don't do, whether I say it or not, if you don't behave yourself, you're going to go to hell, my boy. Is that right, Dad? Why? Why do you say that? Because it's here, and it's here, and it's here. And you believe that, Dad? Yes, I do. Ah, well, in that case. And if he sees the dad giving the example, not believing just with his mouth, but with his action, then a boy will shape up. But otherwise, forget it. And boys, especially adolescents, are probing. What do you believe in? Why do you believe in Dad? And Mum, they're pushing them. And Dad and Mum have got to, by example, show what they're really about. Then the boys can follow. They won't follow otherwise, and they're quite right. And God will punish the compromise of the adults by the refusal of the compromise on the part of the children. And usually, they're taking it in the wrong direction. He will punish it. It's the punishment of the adults will be their behavior of the children. You can't have morals without dogma. It won't work. It's the dream of a lot of decent liberals, but that dream is collapsing today. It is collapsing in spades. It's collapsing in ruins. And still people don't want to see it. Still your liberals dream. And they write books and books and books in these sick universities about on new morals without any dogma. Just a nice to be nice. Won't work. Just won't work. All right. Therefore, when they undermine dogma, by undermining religion, they put the skids under morality. And it's simply a matter of time before morality corrupts. They unleash a deplorable immorality. See how the Pope argues it in 19. He will do it without any slang. He will do it elegantly and concisely. 20. By denying original sin and by exaggerating natural goodness, they craftily promote licentiousness. That's just a one-line summary of a whole paragraph of the Pope. You must read what the Pope say. You must read these paragraphs. Read. They're precious, these paragraphs. They are a picture of the modern world. They promote licentiousness. Because, you know, everybody is nice. Everybody is tiptoeing through the tulips. The sound of music, drifting around in the meadows with flowers growing everywhere, right? There was a young man who came into the seminary, he didn't last very long, who'd seen that film, he admitted, 36 times. I think he saw it two or three times every Christmas. The Sound of Music. If I was a boy and I had a dad who watched The Sound of Music, I'd go and become a punk rocker. I'd pull my hair in orange and green spikes.
You say 36 what?
The Sound of Music. The Sound of Music. Sick, yes. It's just sentimentality. That's all it is. I've not even seen the film, but I know I can smell a mile off it. That's what it is. Does anybody tell me I'm wrong? All right. Well, by denying original sin, everybody is wheely nice. There you are, the denial of original sin. There's a very smart man in the 19th century, Donoso Cortes, a Spaniard. He was a liberal early on, but he wised up about the age of 25, I think. Very, very smart. And he was a liberal, but he wised up. And when he wised up, he said, one of the things he said was, most modern errors go back to two. Remember this. Nearly all modern errors go back to either the denial of the supernatural or the denial of original sin. Write it down. If you write down something from tonight, write down that. Most modern errors, nearly all modern errors, go back to the denial either of the supernatural or of original sin. Donoso Cortes, great man, Spaniard. Donoso Cortes, D-O-N-O-S-O-C-O-R-T-E-S. He was a diplomat. He was a Spanish ambassador in Berlin. He died quite young. I think he died about 50 maybe even younger, 45. He died maybe in his 40s. Brilliant mind. And really slices open the modern world. And he sees it all already back in the 1850s. And he had quite a lot to do. He was behind the Syllabus of Errors. He was behind that. Something he wrote helped the Pope to put together the Syllabus of Errors. So he said, the denial of original sin and the denial of the supernatural. We've had both of these here, notice. Naturalism, the denial, and the two are connected. The two are connected. And you have to go into dogma to see how and why they're connected. The fascinating question of original sin, it's a mysterious dogma. But, the two are connected because when Adam fell, he lost grace and he wrecked human nature. I mean, he put a gash in human nature. Original sin not only let the air out of the tire, it also left a weakness in the rubber. Both. And the one is the loss of grace, and the other is the wound of nature. And the two are connected from the fall of Adam. So the denial of the supernatural, the denial of grace, and the denial of original sin. The two are connected. They're not the same, but they are connected. All right. By denying original sin, by exaggerating natural goodness, by pretending that everybody is naturally good. Hollywood does that all the time. The pretense that everybody is naturally good. And Hollywood produces a culture which produces serial killers. The Hollywood culture results in serial killers. Have any of you seen that Ted Bundy videotape? Put out by James Dobson. Very interesting. Very interesting. About the serial killer. Maybe we ought to use the TV set downstairs to show one or two videotapes. There's a videotape of Ted Bundy. You know, the night before he rode the lightning, he asked to see James Dobson, who's this organizer of a Defend the Family operation out in Canada. He's a decent man without dogma. He believes in Christ, but he does believe in Catholicism. Therefore, You know, but he's a decent man, obviously. He's trying to do his best. He's obviously a decent man. And James Dobson, the Bundy asked to see Dobson in order to say, to tell Dobson all about pornography. Because Bundy's personal experience, you remember the name Ted Bundy, you remember it in the papers, didn't you? Right. Bundy's personal experience was it's the pornography which got him into being a serial killer. The violent pornography. He constantly needed to increase the dose until the point where the films and the books were no longer enough. He had to transfer to reality. When he first murdered, it was horrific and it took a long time to get over it. The second murder took less time to get over, and so on and so on. And through a series of maybe 28 or more murders, it's horrific. And he, in honesty, and apparently, and in some remorse, in a genuine remorse, he wants to talk about this to James Dobson in order to get the message out before he departs this world. And it's a good tale. I don't know where you get it from. I got a copy of it here. Maybe if you're interested, I'll find out where it comes from. And it's well worth seeing the horrific effect of hardcore pornography. And of course, softcore pornography leads to hardcore and hardcore. And he says, your American towns and villages have got Ted Bundys all over the place. And the girls are disappearing. You walk into a grocery store and you see an advertisement. This girl disappeared. Heaven knows what happened to her. A serial killer could easily have got her. Yes?
This is James Dobson's radio program. It's called Focus on the Family.
That's it. Focus on the Family. That's the name of his organization.
It's Station Colorado Springs.
I think that's right.
That's where it's at. Yeah.
I think that's
Focus
right.
Focus on the Family is Colorado Springs.
Yes. Though he may live in California. He's a decent man. But a decent man who isn't a Catholic hasn't got enough to stand up to what you've got to stand up to today. Today, there is a storm howling across the cliff face. And if you're mountaineering on that cliff face, you've got to bang in those, what do you call them, pitons? Those pins, those metal pins that which mountaineers climb on, you know? You've got to bang right into the rock. It's no use a half bang piton. It's going to come off. Only Catholicism can stand up to what's going on today. Yes?
I've listened to this program quite often.
Yes.
And he is, of course, excellent, as you point out.
Yes.
But when he was interviewing Charles Colson.
Yes.
And the idea of a Christian state, they wouldn't go along with. And also, it seems like he doesn't take any sort of strong position on divorce.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't know what.
Yeah, you see, there's always some weakness. And without the Catholic fullness of Catholic truth, you're vulnerable. And if he went on this program against some smart interviewer, like they've got on TV. The interviewer would find that weakness and you'd drive a car and horses through Dobson. He'd say, what about divorce, doctor? And Dobson would have to say what he thinks. What? And so, and then he'd simply take the consequences of approving divorce, and he'd make a monkey of Dobson, of Dr. Dobson. I'm afraid he would. That's what would be liable to happen. It's not, you've got to, there's only one position which is completely intact, and that's the Catholic position. So, by exaggerating natural goodness, I said, everybody is naturally good. It's just not true. We've got original sin. We are naturally wicked. And none of us, what the Catholic Church teaches us, what the Masons tell us, we're naturally good, and therefore we behave like, they tell us that we're angels, and therefore we behave like demons. The Catholic Church tells us that we are potential demons, every single one of us. If sin just really got going, if we allowed sin to get a grip, and without the grace of God, it will get a grip. And we'd better be careful because we have no idea just what evil we would get up to if the grace of God didn't prevent us.
Stalin.
Another example.
Yes.
So natural goodness is baloney, dangerous baloney. But the modern culture, not only American, modern culture is full of natural goodness. One of the great architects of natural goodness, anybody? A Frenchman.
Rousseau
is right. Rousseau, R-O-U-S-S-E-A-U. He's a great one for natural goodness. And he's an absolute delinquent. Meriton has a good phrase for it. He calls it the baptizing of sin. That's to say, you take sinful human nature and you baptize it and say, it's really marvelous, and it isn't at all. You've got to, you know, human nature, even after baptism, carries these flaws with it. That's dogma. And when you understand that even baptized, you still have these weaknesses which you have to fight against, which is dogma, then you're in a position to start lining yourself up for good moral behavior, because you realize you're constantly going to have to fight against these flaws which are still there until a quarter of an hour after we drop into the grave. So the Masons exaggerate natural goodness, and by this means they craftily promote licentiousness, in other words, wicked behavior. By telling everybody that they're good, they encourage people to behave wickedly. You go, look, you walk down the street of any town today, and what do you see? All these little girls, these nice teenage girls, I mean, as God made them, they're nice. And they're good looking. And there they are, about 12 or 13 or 14 or 15 or 16, and they're dressed in these tank tops and short shorts, and they go up and down the street as though it's virtuous to dress in public like that. As though it's positively right and righteous to do it. It isn't at all. It's positively wicked to parade up and down the street like that. Undressed like they are. It's objectively wicked. Because it's going to get all kinds of, you know, men going like this. If they're normal men with red blood in their veins. But then the girls are absolutely convinced that it's righteous to do so. Do you agree that this is what the impression they give and the impression they give? That, you know, they prink up and down in these little shorts and these tight vests and so on, and their behavior tells you that they think that what they're doing is good and virtuous. And that is the promoting of natural goodness, which craftily promotes licentiousness. That's a perfect example, and in this way you've got it all over the place. In a Catholic country, you would never have girls walking around like that. Never, never, never. They'd dress modestly, and they'd stay a lot more at home than they would parade up and down the streets. Reuben.
But they're still dangerous, even if they got a big ass. I have to get you the corner body.
Reuben, there are nevertheless precautions that you can take. Oh, yeah. But the point is that in the Masonic societies, you absolutely do away with all precautions, right?
Oh,
yes.
In talking to some people, I've got the impression that the fault of that is all on the observer.
That's Masonic thinking. Doing this is absolutely virtuous. It's innocent and virtuous.
It's all wrong.
That's it. That's it. And that's wrong.
Everybody.
That is radically wrong. But that's typical anti-Catholicism, if you like. The correct thing is that we all of us have original sin. Men are particularly inflammable as in that particular respect because of original sin. And therefore, you know, women do not dress like that in public. They dress like that for their husbands in private and for nobody else. For nobody else. That's sanity. That's Catholic sanity. Given original sin. But when you deny original sin, then that's the result. It's virtuous to show everybody what God gave you, and dirt is all in the eye of the beholder. No? It's wrong. It's simply wrong. And that's the Masonic society, and that is Hollywood. Hollywood is steeped in naturalism. Soaked in naturalism.
I've had comments like, well, that's your mind's the one that's in the gutter. I don't look at it that way, you know. I don't look at it like that. If you do, then you've got a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That's exactly the attitude. And it's not Catholic. It's anti-Catholic. It's wrong. It's untrue. But there's no doubt that that is absolutely the attitude. And that's why all of those that do it think they are being virtuous. Well, let's go move on. By laicizing marriage, they dissolve the family. Marriage they make into simply a civil contract. It's no longer a sacrament. The sacramentality of marriage is the 20th stitch of society. The sacramentality of marriage is the 20th stitch. You undo the sacramentality of marriage, you undo marriage. You undo marriage, you undo the family. You undo the family, you undo the kids, you undo abortion, you undo divorce, the whole thing comes apart. Matthew.
one of the aims of homosexual agenda in the United States. It's interesting, this information was not distributed by main mass media, is to not only legalizing the same-sex couples, but multi-personal relations, like, I believe, two men, three women, what is it? In some cultures, we can find, primitive culture, we can find polygamy or polyandria.
Polyandry,
but something like this has no name.
Polyandrigamy. Polygamyandry. It suits polyannas.
That's been going on for 5,000 years already. Man has always been that way.
Yeah, well. Yeah, Catholicism has put barriers to it, but the Freemasonry is removing those barriers, and now it's all paganism is all coming back. They dissolve the family. By laicizing education, they demoralize the young. Read these paragraphs, you will see a portrait of modern education and exactly what's happening to the state schools today. It's all Mason. In politics, they promote liberty, equality, fraternity, libertarianism, there's a 1A too many in there, egalitarianism, democratism, and the godless state. And thus, Freemasons are paving the way for the total destruction of rank and property, which is communism. And communism, sure enough, came, as I say, within a few decades of this encyclical. This worse than re-paganizing. Why is it worse than the old paganism? Why is the new paganism worse than the old?
It's godless.
Well, yes, actually, yes.
The old paganism.
The old paganism was quasi-antinatural. It's more sophisticated. Why?
The old paganism is, of course, rooted in lack of knowledge of God.
Yeah.
The modern paganism knows God and rejects
him. No, not only knows God, it knows Jesus Christ. It's post-Christian. The old paganism was pre-Christian. It never knew Christ and never rejected Christ. The new paganism has known Christ and has rejected and is rejecting Christ. That's why it's so much worse. This worse than re-paganizing of the individual, family, and society is criminal folly. For instance, that people may withdraw their civil obedience when they like is completely false. That's, you know, democratism. Similarly, to impose artificial equality all round on when men are naturally unequal is wholly unreasonable. To pretend that all men are equal when it's obvious that they have very different gifts, very different capacities, and ought to occupy are gifted by God to occupy very different and complementary and unequal functions in society. And then to impose on everybody equality is unreasonable. By promoting these errors, Freemasonry is favoring the overthrow of all things by communism and socialism. The Pope comes back to this. Freemasonry is making the bed for communism. In truth, Freemasonry has deluded the rulers and it has deceived the people, turning them against Christianity. Whereas in fact, the truth of the matter is that peace and concord or harmony depend upon the church and upon the rejection of Freemasonry. So,